Welcome back to The Takeaway. Todd Zwillick filling in for John Hockenberry today. The last will and testament, a chance for people to leave their earthly possessions to those they love or to show those they don't love what they really thought of them. And now more than 100 million American wills are bequeathed to you on the internet, thanks to a three-year digitization project by the genealogical research firm Ancestry. The project gathers wills and probate records going back as far as the colonial era, all posted online in a searchable database that lets you look up the requests of your great-great-great-aunt alongside of Eli Whitney, if you like. And we asked you what you'd leave behind to your loved ones.
This is Gary Bremen from Wilton Manors, Florida. Several years ago, one of my friends was visiting the house, and she really liked my knife block, of all things, in the kitchen. And she said, jokingly, "When you die, leave that to me." It's in the will.
This is Holly Freeman in Portland, Oregon. My wife and I have made wills. We have stipulated travel overseas for our children before they inherit. And the estate will pay for the travel, but they must navigate in another country and culture for a few months. We decided the skills we need in this world are compassion and empathy, and want to offer our children the tools they will need to be good stewards in our world.
Well, that's a pretty creative will there. We also heard about what you would not leave behind. From Chula Vista, California, my will states that no money goes to anyone that can't run a sub-8-minute mile. Man, Chula Vista, that's tough. So we needed some answers here. Jennifer Utley is family historian at Ancestry, and she says that wills tell an awful lot about the people who leave them behind.
What wills bring to the table is you not only get information about the person, but you find out what they really cared about in their life and who they really cared about, which gives you a much deeper understanding of your family as a whole.
I was going through some of these wills and some of the reports, and, you know, part of it feels like the yard sale when people put all the junk and the things that are normally shut up inside their house out on the front lawn. And if you're walking by, you can look at their stuff.
Well, it really shows you that, you know, back 200 years ago, you know, those 6 teaspoons that they're calling out were prized possessions.
And we've learned a lot of things also about some famous Americans. Harriet Beecher Stowe is in your database. Eli Whitney, famous inventor of the cotton gin. What have we learned?
It's really interesting how they call out what's important to us. Harriet Beecher Stowe, she had lots of different stock in railroads. And she also left an orange grove in Florida to her son. And Daniel Webster, he had a specific gold snuff box that had the head of George Washington on it. And he also left his beloved grandson all of his fishing tackle. You know, you find out really who's important to them.
I had no idea that Daniel Webster was a fisherman. I have looked at his desk in the Senate chamber many times. You know, Jennifer Utley, I have to say one other famous person is in your database. And I made some conclusions based on reading the will of Paul Revere.
Yes.
Paul Revere could be kind of a jerk. I'm serious. He could be kind of a jerk when you read his will.
Well, he left $500 to each of his grandchildren. He had one grandchild who he seemed to favor, so that guy got $500 more. But there was one grandson, and for that grandson, they only left him $1.
That seems petty to me. I mean, I didn't know Paul Revere, but $1 when everyone else gets $500 sends a pretty clear message.
Right, but you could also think about it like this. Maybe he already took part of his inheritance and he had agreement with his grandfather. Or maybe Paul Revere was actually a little annoyed with him.
The idea of giving $1 to a relative, he's not alone. I mean, there's a lot of this going on.
It's actually pretty common. We're finding enough of them that we're starting to call it the $1 Club. And last night I was actually looking at my own family tree, and I found someone else in the $1 Club. This is my 5th great-grandfather, and so I actually have a new mystery to try and solve.
What do these wills, do you think, say, if not about the people involved, but about the period? There are lots of wills from around the time of the Chicago Fire, for instance.
Right. So if we looked at a lot of prominent businessmen from Chicago, and in every case, they put provisions in their will that talked about what to do in case of fire. In those cases, all those businessmen, they lost something. You know, they had factories or businesses or whatever burn up in the fire. So they wanted to make sure that for their heirs, that they had thought about what would happen should that happen again. So they really, not only did they give a snapshot about the family, but it always also gives you some context about the world they were living in.
Well, what are you hearing in terms of feedback from members or people who search your database, new discoveries they've made or insights that they've had after poring through some of these wills?
Well, a lot of our members have been looking at wills at the, you know, local level for a long time. So they're just really excited that they can now search them so easily at home. But people are finding really interesting things. We found a will where the guy talks about how he'd like to be buried, and he wanted his head to be equidistant from both of his wives, where both his wives were buried. And there was another one who wanted to be buried. His wife was buried somewhere else, and he wanted them both to be moved. And he told his friend who was in charge of it, if you don't do this, I will come back and haunt you.
Jennifer Utley, I want to think that having your head being buried equidistant between your two wives is the strangest will you've seen, is it?
Well, the one I like the best, really, is the guy who at the very beginning of his will leaves $50 to his son-in-law to go buy a piece of rope to hang himself with.
Oh, I take back what I said about Paul Revere. There are bigger jerks in the Annals of Ancestry's will database than Paul Revere. Jennifer Utley, family historian at Ancestry, thanks so much.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
And we've been asking you to tell us some of your experiences with wills. Have you made one? Ever been jilted by something not left to you? From Portland, Oregon, the strangest thing that was left to me was the wool Greek sailing cap that my dad always wore when he sailed. I've never worn it, but I keep it knowing how much he loved it. Maybe one day I'll leave it to one of my children. That would be weird.
This is Chris Bills calling from Little Rock, Arkansas. My father is an ultramarathoner and frequently loses toenails, and over the last 20 years, he has kept them in a plastic bag and left them in his will for me. I can't wait to claim those in the end. Thanks, Dad.
Hi, my name's Lorraine. I live in Davie, Florida. A cousin, a millionaire cousin of ours, left $1 million in her will for us to take care of her cats. Luckily, I'm allergic to cats. So we're all hoping that she lives a good, long life.
Toenails, gross. $1 million for a cat, that I could get behind. Tell us your stories, 8778, my take is the number. There's much more at thetakeaway.org. This is The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.